Blog Talk Radio.
I am not even going to pretend like I want to do this tonight.
Good evening, everyone. This is Dean.
I'm Diana.
And this is D&D, Delivering the Truth in New York State and Beyond. And do we have a big week this week? We've got a great guest coming on in a little while. In the meantime, big news, Trump was indicted, 34 counts. What was that, one count per dollar or something? Who knows?
I don't know.
It is ridiculous.
They're saying he can get up to 123 years in jail. 123 years? Why not just give him, I don't know, 20? Because it's probably all he's got left to live, if that.
Yeah. And, you know, so here's this DA that's throwing the book at Trump, but he's letting rapists and killers off on bail reform.
Yeah.
So, you know, Greg Gutfeld put this very well. He said it was the power of the insiders versus the outsiders. And Trump's an outsider. Let's get, you know, right down to the nitty-gritty. Trump, you know, he was a billionaire playboy when he was running for president. You know, and everybody knew it, and nobody seemed to care.
Yeah, or he's part of the whole deal, and it's just a distraction, because in the meantime, there's now, what, three countries that have ditched the U.S. dollar?
Yep, and they've been talking about ditching the dollar for a long, long time.
Well, yeah. But,
you know, as
you know, they had a timeline for everything.
Yep. So, and then that'll fit in well with our guest tonight.
I think so.
Who's written a couple books on socialism, and I'm sure the dollar and all that'll fit well into it.
Yeah, especially because he talks about economic issues. But, yeah, so real life happens even in Diana and Dean's life. Mm-hmm. Diana herniated three discs in her neck, and I have had an awful 3 weeks with it. So you want to talk about some major... I've been through a lot of pain in my life with the Lyme disease, and I am telling you, this has got to be some of the worst pain I have ever been in, ever. And, you know, usually I go the holistic route, and for some reason, it is just not touching it this time. So we'll see what happens with this, but I'm kind of a little off my bubbly, normal self because I'm in agony. I really am. So I don't suggest a disc herniation in your neck, just so you know. Don't suggest any of that.
No.
Yeah.
So what other news? Robert Kennedy Jr. enters the 2024 presidential bid as a Democrat.
Yeah, interesting.
So, yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, there's mixed reviews about him. Some say he's part of the whole cabal, but he does fight, you know, a lot for vaccine rights. You know, he's been around way longer than the pandemic has ever been. You know, fighting for, obviously he's, you know, he's president of the Children's Health Defense. And, you know, they do a lot in fighting for, especially for vaccine rights.
Yeah.
So it's a good site to check out, Children's Health Defense. Lots of good information on there. Great organization.
So here's a good one. A friend of mine actually broke down and bought a Tesla. Fully, you know, there's no gasoline in this thing. This thing's fully electric. And he took me on a ride in it two nights ago, you know, just for 5 minutes. Interesting vehicle, you know. It's like a computer-controlled vehicle. So I asked him, I said, so when you charge it up, you know, what's happened to your electric bill? He said, nothing. What he does is he takes it to the visitor center, the welcome center, in the town that we live on, the $25 million, you know, elephant in the room,
mm-hmm.
And they've got free charging stations. So he goes there. He says when it gets down to about 40%, it takes an hour and a half to charge it. So he goes there, plugs it in for free on New York State taxpayers' dollars, connects to the Wi-Fi in there, reads his articles, and then, you know, when the thing is charged up, then he drives home, which is about a mile for him. So, you know, he still has his Silverado, you know, big carbon footprint truck, I guess, for longer trips and stuff. But around town and stuff, he uses this little electric Tesla and fills it up with electricity for free on taxpayer dollars.
Mm. Well, I mean, imagine if everybody has to do that, though, what this world would be like.
Yeah, then there'd
if
be lines
running around. Yeah.
Then there'd be lines around at the visitor center for the free electricity.
Yeah. Well, no, not just that. I mean, imagine if everybody just all of a sudden has to charge their cars. Oh, wait a minute. I can't make my next appointment. My car died.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just like, hello. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, and then somebody went from, I think, Chicago to Miami. And, you know, they had to plan their stops. You know, it took them like 4 or 5 days to do what normally takes 24 hours because they'd have to stop and get a hotel room and charge up the car and and things like that. So, you know, maybe around town, you know, these things are okay. But, you know, for what a lot of us are used to, you know, traveling, you know, 400, 500, 600 miles, you know, they just won't go that far.
Yeah. Yeah. So, other news around the country, Idaho's governor passed a bill today. They signed a bill into law making it illegal for an adult, that's not obviously the parent, to help a minor get an abortion without parental consent. So, in other words, if a kid's under 18, they have to have parental consent to get an abortion.
Totally opposite of what's going on in New York Street, in New York State.
Yeah, New York State, you can have one if you're over the age of 13 with no parental consent. So, yeah, interesting stuff.
And then West Virginia.
God. I'm really very surprised at them.
Yeah, a lot of places in West Virginia.
Well, of course, there is a lot of inbreeding there, so who knows.
Yeah.
But they passed a law that they're going to allow their Supreme Court. They ruled that transgender athletes can compete in female school sports. I mean.
And, you know, I lived there for 8.5 years, and I am, you know, even when I was there, it was one of those blue states that nobody even campaigned in.
Yeah.
They knew that that they were going to, you know, vote blue. It didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, now Obama turned it red because they went after coal, and, you know, everybody in West Virginia is dependent one way or another on the coal industry.
Mm-hmm.
But even though they were highly blue when I lived there, they were still very religious. You know, it was the Bible Belt. You know, and they used to kid that it was the buckle on the Bible Belt. So for their Supreme Court to be liberal enough to say that, you know, men can compete in women's sports, I'm highly, highly surprised, especially knowing the people down there.
Well, they're probably going to bring their Bud Lights to those fields.
Yeah.
When Bud Light came out with their first can of transgenderism with little rainbows all over it, and I think we need to take the rainbow back.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we got to take the rainbow back to where it belongs in the Book of Genesis. But
well, in the Irish, you know, you go to the end of the rainbow and there's a leprechaun with a pot of gold.
Yeah, everything is literally now trans. I was in Kohl's today, which is like a very far right store. You know, all of their advertisements now, like on the walls. What's the number to call in for the guests?
319-527-6208.
6208. Okay, somebody was asking. So 319-527 6208.
And press 1 if you want to raise your hand and talk or ask a question or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, we're waiting for our guest to sign in, but I'm definitely not on my game tonight. I cannot get my words out. It's like, can somebody just please, well, I mean, you can take a knife to my back because that's already what it feels like. So,
Stormy Daniels.
No, wait, I want to finish on the Bud Light thing.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah. So I guess their stock was down close to like 42% or something today.
Wow.
So I guess when you start messing with your who really supports you, you know, people are going to pull out. Yeah, you know. But anyway, I was at Kohl's and everything. Their advertisements now, like even on the walls, they have advertisements of people advertising. I don't know, say they're advertising a pair of Calvin Klein underwear, right? And it used to just either be male or female or a couple. Well, now it's either two guys or two girls all over the place. And in the center of the store, huge, big rainbow pride display of flags and water bottles, and I'm like, oh my God. You know, it just doesn't end. And even Jack Daniels, I guess, is doing it. And I'm shocked at that, but I guess Jack Daniels now is promoting drag queen crap. It's like, really?
It's unbelievable.
What is going on? But, you know, that's what they want. I mean, that's what the deep left state, that's what they want. They want to normalize this stuff so they can take away the family, I mean, the nuclear family, if there's even anything left of it. But, you know, they want to do this so that they can condition the younger generation and you know, they, I don't know, maybe it's just another way of their population control, you know, because people won't be having kids. I don't know. It's absolutely crazy. But I like this this meme that somebody sent me through our email. It says, the year is 2042. My electric car won't start because I used the wrong pronoun yesterday. No air conditioner in my 50-square-foot apartment because I reached my monthly allotment of farts, but I think they are adding grub worms to my Cricut paste. Now, isn't that the truth? Because that's what literally, I mean, they're saying
that's
that,
what they want, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now we have, like, the shortage cattle beef production that we've ever had, and now they're going to start putting the MNRA vaccines in the
animals.
In the animals.
That they're harvested, that, you know, are grown to harvest for us to eat.
Yeah, and I mean, and I say this every week, I don't give a shit how much you guys think it costs, because the cost of food, regular food, is the same price as organic now. So buy organic. Look for the non-GMO label. Now people are like, oh, well, you can't trust it. You don't know. Well, guess what? I'll take my chances over, you know, buying non-organic. You know, and I've done this for years. I've been organic for, you know, 10 years or longer, 12 years or so that I've been doing organic because it takes research and it takes homework to actually learn. You know, it doesn't come overnight. It didn't come overnight. It wasn't like one morning I woke up and I was going to say, oh, I'm not going to use shampoos with sulfates or parabens anymore. You know, it was learning and educating myself, you know, which is what people will have to do. I mean, I was reading some article before this. Some dude has eaten a Big Mac every day for 52 years.
Mm.
And this was a news article. This is the kind of crap that's making news. It's like, really? Who gives a shit? If you want to put that crap into your body, I don't care, but why do you have to put a news article about it? How about let's give somebody credit that's been eating organic for 15 years? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, so here's one that's about a week old. The Treasury issues dire warning about Social Security fund. So they're saying Social Security and Medicare, you know, are broke, and by 2031, they'll be insolvent. Well, you know, I've been hearing this crap since the 60s.
Well, with the way that the banks are going, it's possible that it could be. Who knows?
You know, and one time my cousin and I, we got, you know, a little bit drunk, and we had nothing better to do. So we figured out, you know, we pulled out the finance books and looked at the future value, and we figured out that if you took $5,000 a year and then put it into a 401k, and your company took $5,000 a year and then put it into your 401k, that after 40 years, so we had people, you know, retiring at 62, there was enough money in there where you could get about $50,000 a year without touching the principal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other nice part about it is that you know, when you died, you'd will that money to your heirs. Unlike Social Security, that you spend about the same amount, the maximum that you could get at the time was about $3,300 a month, or you know, about $30,000 a year. And that's because the government is just so irresponsible with the money.
Mm-hmm.
There should be tons of money in the Social Security fund.
Well, they're giving it to Ukraine, don't you know?
Yeah.
And to whoever else that they can get their hands on. It's all part of the agenda, and I think that you know, we're going to be talking with Paul a lot about this. So I think we should bring Paul on. I think he's on. Unless you got something. Is there anything about New York you want to update? Should we update anything about New York, do you think? Budget still hasn't passed.
Is this him right here?
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, okay.
It's got to be him. Yeah.
Okay, let's...
unmute him.
And
he's so similar to the other number that's listening. That's why odd. No, that's not it.
Yeah, it's this one.
Yeah. Paul, are you there?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thanks for that. Yeah, was a successful connection.
So just to give you a quick synopsis, we're live on a worldwide podcast, and there is a slight delay because it's live radio.
I understand. Go ahead. I'll let you finish.
That's okay. We go to commercial at 8 and 8:30 because we have to pay our sponsors. So until... we go to our first commercial break. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into. I have a feeling there's going to be a few laughs with this show.
Wait a minute, I've got a couple of questions for him because I read up on him for a half hour before the show started.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have a 716 cell phone, even though you live in North Central West Virginia.
Yes, sir. I kept the same phone number. I actually fled. I didn't really seek West Virginia so much as I fled New York State during the communist shutdowns of 2020. I was born into New York State briefly. I was born there and lived there my whole life. I'm in my mid-30s now. I planned to leave by my 40th birthday. However, the shutdowns of 2020 forced my hand. I call it my divorce from New York State. At the time, I had five residential rental properties in the area, which is already a nightmare, which we can probably get into a little bit. Some of these things that are called, quote, tenant rights, end quote, in fact, tax the tenant class in ways that are detrimental to them. But anyway, so I was there, and then the shutdowns happened. The governor gave my customers a license to steal from me starting in, I think, April of 2020, no end in sight. I think it ended finally in October of 2021, maybe. I kind of kept up on the news from afar. By the end of 2020, I just said enough is enough. I sold my places. So between the stolen money from me by the customer, I was taxed by the state, right? The state violated the takings clause of the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, which says that it shall not touch the citizen's property for the state's own purposes without just compensation. What it did was it commandeered my properties. It gave them away to these what are now deadbeats or thieves, but what were before tenants. And so that between that money and then the depressed value of the houses, because I sold them in the middle of this communist shutdown, so obviously it was under duress, it cost me between $50,000 and $70,000. And that's the low end, which was horrible. It was very hurtful to me. But it's like I call it my divorce. You know, it's like when you're in a bad relationship and you stay together, you know, you should end it, but you stay together for a little longer for whatever reason. You have a business together or the kids or something else, but then it just festers and it festers and it builds and it just comes to a point where you say, I don't care what it costs me. I don't care what the consequences are. I am not living like this anymore. And that was basically the reason I left New York State. I kept my phone number. And real briefly, to finish my introduction, I'll throw it back to you. I do have a website, pauldayton.us. If anybody listening now, the show is being broadcast on April 6th, 2023. Within the next week, if you email me, just go to the website, it has an email me sort of area. The first 50 people who mention this show, the D&D broadcast, we'll get a free book mailed to them. Just mention the show and put your mailing address, and I'll mail you a free book, a copy of my first book, Correcting Our Financial Miseducation. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I want to talk more about that, too, the financial miscommunication.
I might go to your website right now and sign up and get a free book. So,
really.
But anyway.
I think he said he was sending us one.
So anyway, I know West Virginia very well because I lived in Huntington. You know, the western corner of the state for 8.5 years. So I'll assume, and you don't have to tell me, you're probably around Clarksburg, Bridgeport, Elkins, you know, you said North Central, somewhere around there. So, and what's funny about West Virginia is when I lived down there 35 years ago, it was as blue could be. Nobody would even campaign there because they all knew that, you know, they were going to vote blue. Well, then Obama changed that when he had his war on coal, and now it's a pretty darn red state, which is funny.
It is, but it's mixed. So they have, and I call the Democrats the Communist Party, so I'll just call them what they are. They have a Communist Party governor called Jim Justice here, which was bad. So it was kind of a mixed bag. So I arrived here in January of 2021. I did my first place. I just bought. If I had ever set foot in West Virginia in my life beforehand, I didn't. I mean, I don't. Maybe on a long trip or something at a rest stop. Like I've never been. You know, I'm not a big traveler. And but I just had checked a lot of boxes I liked. But it was interesting. So you come here. But they had the governor, so they were kind of like they were officially quote participating in like the theater, the scam, the silly masks, the stay, you know, 4 feet away from me or 5 feet or whatever made up number they want to use. And by the way, all over the world they were using fake numbers, 6 feet in the U.S., 3 feet in Japan, I think it was 4 feet in some of the Scandinavian countries. The whole thing was just obviously a scam. They were obviously making it up as they went along. So anyway, they kind of had that on the books, but in practice, I mean, people were, you know, not really putting up with it. So I'm in Morgantown now, and that's where I am.
Well, yeah, that's where my family roots are, is in Morgantown, my dad's side of the family. Yeah.
Very cool. I heard your show before I was on, and I heard the two of you, so I'd like to pick up on a couple of those things, particularly Social Security. My first book spends a lot of time on the New Deal. And that's on purpose. The first half's about personal finance, and the second half's about larger financial issues. It's designed to be it's for everybody, but it's designed to be sort of a guide for, quote, young people, 16 to 25-year-olds, and just sort of teach them to sort of unlearn some of these bad lessons that we've learned about personal finance so that'll help them in their life, but also politically or larger issues, people who are less vulnerable are more difficult to control and less susceptible to sort of fear-mongering. So the two do go hand in hand. The second part is about larger financial issues. If when a politician attaches the words New Deal to any kind of legislation they have going on, it should spell instant political suicide for those politicians. And it's the opposite. It's like a great name brand. And I hope we'll spend some time on that during our time together today.
In New York is classic for that. Everything is new. New electricity bills, new bail reform bills, new. Everything is wonderful. And meanwhile, it's a complete tire fire here. Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah.
Except for the pollution that the flaming tires put out.
Right. Right. So
you know what's funny? In New York State and in California, real briefly, I know we're up against the top of the hour, the laws, okay, the verbiage of what qualifies as child abuse, that is failure to provide housing, food, and medical treatment for your dependent children, are the exact same requirements, so that says that you should be punished, right? You're guilty of child abuse. But those are the same exact qualifications to be rewarded with handouts for the healthy, things like food stamps, things like Section 8 housing and Medicaid. It's very interesting. Like, which one is it? Are we punishing it or are we rewarding it? It's very backwards.
Oh, yeah.
And then what about the cash back from your EBT card?
Oh, yeah, that's a whole thing. So they take
you
it
know
by
the difference?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to mention briefly the difference between – so if you're on handouts for the healthy, paid-to-fail socialism. I call it what it is. People who are paid to fail, and then we punish people for being productive. Paid-to-fail socialism, if you're a single person without a child – it's good for about – you can earn about $15,000 and your income will be effectively doubled. However, if you have just one illegitimate child, one child out of wedlock, you have possession of it legally, you can earn up to $20,000 a year and you are lavished with $40,000 in handouts, an effective income of between $50,000 and $60,000 a year. That's and I detail that in the book. And in fact, the book, I was in Buffalo when I wrote a lot of it, so I use Erie County and New York State numbers. So that's interesting, I guess.
No wonder they have so many kids if they're getting paid per kid. You know, I mean, if you go down to the social services building, they're down there and they've got four or five kids and they got a bunch of gold around their neck and the latest iPhone. And, you know, I have a girlfriend who, you know, she's got three kids and her husband had died. So she needed extra help. You know, she really legitimately needed extra help. She went down there and she was telling all about the, you know, the scenery down there. But they would not literally give her food stamps because she missed the cutoff by $12. $12. She's got three.
Yeah,
kids.
So that's what happens. I call that the welfare trap. People, that it seems alluring at first, but then they get stuck. And I worked kind of menial jobs my whole life, and I still will once in a while pick up a job at like a gas station or something. I saved my money. I invested my savings. I did everything that the New York State victim politics sort of gang says are supposed to be death sentences. I don't have a college certificate, although – with loser politics, they have roped literally everybody in. I mean, you are – boo-hoo, I'm a victim because I don't have a college certificate. And boo-hoo, I'm a victim because I do have a college certificate. Right? I'm so burdened by it. It's so worthless I shouldn't have to pay for it. That's literally 100% of the people are victims. You are a victim if you really want to be. But anyway, I don't have a college certificate. I worked like burger flipping jobs, pizzerias, stuff like that, relatively low-paying jobs. And, I mean, I saved my money. I invested my savings. I worked at, you know, I was the guy who worked weekends. I was the guy who stayed in and didn't go out. And then I have some money, and now I own lots of houses, and, you know, I do okay. And so that's kind of more about my story, but it's more about also for the audience. I mean, if they're telling you this nonsense, you don't have to lose. Now, the welfare trap, it seems alluring to them. At these menial jobs, I've had people, they'd walk in and say, I need more hours. I need more money. I want to work harder. They'd ask the manager, whoever made the schedule, the owner, and then they'd come in the next day because they talked to their caseworker. And they said, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. If I make another $100 a month, I'm going to lose like $2,000 a month in between like food stamps or Medicaid or whatever they're going to lose. So they get caught in this very – it's a trap, right? They got a little mouse trap. It descends on them, and now they're stuck. And so what they do is they vote for a living. Right, that puts the, and it's not right. They're taking people. I mean, sometimes they're just greedy, lazy people. But sometimes there are people who just kind of fall. They want a little temporary help. But what happens is, and you talk to them, and by listening to what they have to say, they view that their career, their employer, their profession, their loyalty, their long-term plan is to be on handouts for the healthy. They don't want to jeopardize that because it takes too long to get back on the list and requalify or whatever. And so it's really the transition. So now they have the bad guys have a voter for life, and they have a person who is, again, sort of stuck and controlled. The other problem with that is, so there are, it's done, quote, in the name of the greater good, end quote. And when you have the group who is most likely to produce violent criminals are unwed black mothers, right? When you pay people to end up in this category, right? This is called incentivization. When you provide incentives to do exactly what is wrong, wrong for the parent, wrong for the child, and wrong for the community around them, because these children will grow up and statistically we know for sure it's not an opinion, it's not a view, it's not an ideology. It is a matter of fact that this group is most likely to produce violent criminals and unleash them upon the community. In every way, it's a loser. The only group who clearly benefits are the career political class. Because for them, see, I'm writing my second book is called Socialism, The Gift That Keeps on Taking, which I plan to have done by the end of the year, this year. And it just takes, and it's, quote, a gift, but it just takes and it takes. All classes lose. Except for the political class, because for them, it's the gift that keeps on giving. There's a, quote, crisis, then they, quote, solve it with socialism or redistribution or communism, whatever you want to call it, right? That makes things worse, exacerbates matters, and so then in a year or a few years, there is a new crisis that arises because of the first supposed solution. And so the politician can say, I'm here to help with more socialism. Vote for me. And as long as the populace is dumb enough to keep buying and be hoodwinked by this, for them, for the politicians, it is the gift that keeps on giving. Over to you.
Absolutely. And I think it's on both sides, too, Republicans and Democrats. We're going to our first commercial. Paul, all you got to do is hang on the line. All right, we'll be back in 4 minutes. D&D, delivering the truth in New York State and beyond. Hang tight, guys. We'll be back.
During the pandemic, my lifestyle drastically changed. My income came to a screeching halt. You have to understand, I'm a hustler. I'm a legit entrepreneur. I sell things. I come in contact with people all the time. I have to stay safe. I didn't have a choice but to trust the vaccine. And if you live the type of lifestyle that I live, you out here in these streets, and you hustling, an entrepreneur like me, why not do it safely? So I want everybody to take this seriously. Take a shot at staying healthy. Get the vaccine.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
We all know that times are tough and things are really expensive right now. So why not save a little bit of your wallet as well as the landfill? Marty.com carries high-quality products at low, low prices, sometimes up to 70% off of retail. I just got a wonderful package of beef jerky for 1 cent sent to my house through Marty.com. Marty.com offers high-quality products at discount prices. Why? Well, sometimes products are seasonal or overstocked, or packaging just changes. It's still great quality food, but it's going to end up in the landfill if we don't find some way to distribute it. And leave that to Marty.com. Now, if you want to save a little extra today, you can get $20 off your first order by going to our Facebook group for Dynamic Word Bible Studies and picking up a discount code there. So check out Dynamic Word Bible Studies at Facebook and find Marty.com on our comments. You'll be able to get this free discount code. It's going to give you $20 off, and it's also a great way to support our show and keep those landfills light and to save some money in your wallet. And I'm all about saving money. So check out Marty.com.
Now, what do you think of the draft? I think America wants new leadership. New leadership. What kind of leadership do you suggest? I suggest a wizard.
A what?
A wizard, like Merlin, who could kill his enemies by wishing them dead. That's the way we'd like to beat communism now, by wishing it dead. The manufacturer wants more war orders and lower taxes. Labor wants more consumer products in a 30-hour week. The college boy wants a stronger army and a deferment for himself. The businessman wants a bigger Air Force and a new Cadillac. The housewife wants security and an electric dishwasher. Everybody wants a strong America, and we all want the same man to pay for it. George. Let George do it.
Ah, I disagree with you. I don't want to let George do it.
You must be the exception.
No, I'm George.
Well, that's a hot one.
Everyone wants George to do it.
Except George.
All right, we are back. And Paul, you know, what you were talking about before the break reminded me of David Clark. He's that black retired sheriff that's about 7 feet tall from, I think, Milwaukee area, wore a cowboy hat all the time. Now he works for a think tank in the D.C. area. But he said that welfare, that the Democrats are the new slave owners because they are the slave owners because they're keeping people down by keeping them on welfare, making it so attractive and so easy that, you know, and Margaret Thatcher said socialism's a great great economic system until you run out of the people to tax. So go ahead. I've unmuted you. Are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Sometimes we've forgotten in the past to unmute, and we've had an entire conversation with nobody. So. We've literally done that.
I'm here. All right. So, yeah, I mean, thank you. So, yes, I mean, you do run out of other people's money. It is attractive at first. You know, I would like to just point out to the audience, I always remember the shows are, I always try to keep in mind, the show is for the audience. Right? You guys could have rang me up. We could have had this conversation privately. There's a lot of people going through a lot of trouble to make sure this gets broadcast. So, for the audience, I'll ask you, if you're a scoffer or you think we're just not telling the truth, how many nations can you name that started off massively impoverished and were elevated because they went to collectivism or central planning, communism, socialism, whatever you want to call it? I can name zero. I can, on the other hand, however, name several instances in which there were the previously, things were previously better. They instituted redistribution in the name of helping the masses, and the masses suffered greatly. I can tell, we could do 5 hours on that if you wish. To name it, one is the New Deal period in the United States. Another is the implementation of communism in Russia during the Stalin period. We have the Mao period in China. These are name brand examples that are obvious. Everyone should know about these things. I mean, for example, in China, when they went to the Great Leap Forward, they outlawed cash wages, okay, and rewards for farm workers. They made it against the law. So you had to get paid in kind. That, which is kind of what you were saying before, Dean, sort of keeping people enslaved, because you don't even pay them with currency. You pay them with housing, right? You pay them with a food stamp card. You pay them with a gas card or whatever it might be. You pay them so that they can't even turn around and make a decision to handle their money. They learn no cash management skills. And they also are stuck. Like, they can't really – they're limited. If you give someone coin of the realm, they can sort of do whatever they want with it. So it is much more limiting. So anyway, they outlaw these cash wages. Guess what happens? Between 57 and 62, so they start out by outlawing personal reward, cash reward. Grain output down 21%. Cotton, cooking oil, meat down 55%. 45 million people starved to death between 1959 and 1961 famine they had over there. More people have been killed by socialism in the 20th century alone than have been killed by all of the diseases in the entirety of recorded human history, including the COVID monster. If you wear those silly masks to, quote, save lives, end quote, and you vote for socialism, you are clueless. I mean, your heart might be in the right place, because they speak in T-shirt slogans, and they speak, I mean, that's easy to understand. You don't have to actually know, I mean, K-N-O-W, you don't have to actually know anything, right? They just speak in health care for all, equality, feed the hungry. They don't say how. Nobody asks questions like, has anybody ever tried this before? And if so, what were the actual outcomes of real people and real money and real life? Nobody asks questions like this. They just say, yes, feed the poor. Over to you.
Yeah. Stay home, stay safe.
Well, you know, when you look through history, socialism always goes to communism, and communism always turns into a dictatorship. Now, why is it so attractive in our country? Because in the past and throughout history, you had the wrong people doing it. We've got the right people in this country. Don't you understand that, Paul? this is a different group of people. It's not the wrong people. It's not the Stalins and the Maos, you know, and these mass murderers throughout history. We've got the right people, so it might work. You know, when it's never worked. It might now.
So you're pointing out a very important, what I think is a very important issue point, which is the issue of having the right person pulling the right lever at the right time. Or how about this? Dependency of the masses upon lucking into, and that's the word, luck, lucking into having the right person at the right time pulling the right lever. What's called socialism, what's called communism, people go around and they have these other things too. And I'm here to illustrate to people, and I'm showing this in my next book. I have a chapter coming called Clinging to Blueprints of Airplanes That Don't Fly, So-Called Experts and Their Fictitious Play World. There are all these theoretical ideas. Well, socialism is different from communism, which is different from fascism. No, what I want to point out to people and suggest to people is that there's one important variable. The important variable is whether or not people decide for themselves or whether or not other people decide, you know, a small group of people decide for everyone. That's the important variable, a small group of people called the state or government, whatever you want to say. All of these little systems that are supposedly different, they all concentrate the power into the hands of the few by decree in the name of helping the masses. That applies to whatever was called socialism, what is called communism, what is called fascism. And what I'm pointing out to everyone is they're all the same. It's all just central planning. The difference, these subtle differences in outcomes, which really, I mean, it's just a question of the people who've had the power concentrated into their hands by decree, how will they behave? How do they choose to use it? So I guess if I want to make it clear, once you concentrate the power into the hands of the few, that's it. Like, that's the important decision to make. So if somebody tells you, well, I'm doing socialism, those other people did communism. Well, the question is, once you turn over the reins, I call it the shackles, right? The people should put the shackles onto the state. The state is this beast. It's an 800-pound gorilla. And people marvel at it. They say, wow, look how strong it is. So somebody unchains one of its arms, and it runs its hand on like a lever. So I went to Niagara Falls, and they have you can like ride a bicycle, and it like generates electricity. It shows you how much it does. So the beast just takes one hand, and he rides it, and he can do 100 man hours worth of electricity by himself with one arm in an hour, let's just say. And people are marveled. They're amazed. They say, wow, wouldn't it be great if we unshackled another one of its hands? Or how about all four of its limbs? Let's just unshackle it completely. And then what happens is the roles of master and servant are inverted, right? Once the beast turns around and puts the shackles on the people, the 800-pound gorilla is in charge now. And you people, and it's too late. It's too late to put the genie in the bottle. It's loose. I mean, it's a big undertaking. And so what I'm suggesting is socialism, communism, these other things, they're not different. They're not. I mean, that they're not. What people are judging is the outcome based on how the people in a position to be tyrants choose to behave. And really, more importantly, it shows that the people are dependent upon having angels, these wonderful altruistic people, into these positions of total power, which have never once existed. Never once in real life with real people and real money has that ever happened. So why would you think that was going to happen next time out there in the world? Over to you guys.
Yep, good point.
Yep, and my answer is because they had the wrong people doing it.
Right, and so yeah. For as long – and you're right, Dean, you're correct that that's sort of their answer. And so I don't really blame the politicians as much. I blame the audience. I mean, it's our fault, right? It's showbiz. It's like show business. If you have a theater someplace and they're putting on a show that is, you know, whatever, not good, right? Stupid, it has no point, it's crass, whatever it is. If the theater is filled with fannies every night and it's sold out for the next 3 months in advance all the time, why would they ever change the show? Why would they? I say it's our fault and you out in the audience. When they go out there and say something like, whoa, we just had the wrong people doing it, almost everybody should react with, well, that's not true, and that's not an important difference. Nobody has ever been there. It has never attracted this perfect angel. And number two, once the perfect angel, let's just say they were in there briefly, once they stop being in there, all the power is still concentrated right there into that seat. So as soon as the next person takes the reins, everybody is at their mercy. How, you know what I mean? It's ripe for tyranny. It's a system that says they're going to help everybody. How does it help all of you listening out there in the world? if there's a, you know, if I tell you I'm taking all your money from your paycheck from now on, and I'm telling you what you can and cannot do for work from now on, and I'm deciding where or not where you're going to live from now on, how is that benefiting you? It benefits me. Makes me powerful. But it doesn't, I mean, you, how does it benefit you, I wonder, out there in the world? Over to you guys.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that they really care as long as they can fulfill their agenda.
Yep. And, you know,
I mean, I think what people have forgotten is that the government was supposed to work for us. You know what I mean? We were supposed to be the government. They weren't supposed to be dictating our every move. You know, and people look at the government as some kind of, you know, uppity god. You know, oh, they'll fix it, they'll fix it. Well, they don't realize that they are we.
Yeah.
We are.
It's the old saying, of the people, for the people, and by the people.
Right, not by the Republicans or the Democrats or whoever it is, because, and this is just my personal opinion, because I used to be involved in the whole Republican thing and the conservative thing and all that. I personally think they're all crooks. You know, they all have their own agendas. You know, and COVID really proved that. But that's just my soapbox, and I'm sticking to it. So.
Well, I don't deny that. I mean, you're right that the Republic. This is what I've told people for years. By the way, about 10 years ago, in my mid 20s, I turned off what I call the tabloid news. I don't ingest it. It really, so everything sort of sticks out like a sore thumb, big time.
Yeah.
I know what the tabloids are saying because I go out into the world, and when I run into like a bunch of people over the course of a week saying something that makes absolutely no sense at all, and when I ask them incredibly simple questions about it, they don't even know what they can't answer them. Then I know what the tabloids are saying. But you are right. These. What's called business interests are just monopolies. You can't beat Santa Claus is another important political, pragmatic political difficulty, which is true. And, yeah, the response to the Republicans are so great is that at least they're not those goddamn communist Democrats. That's kind of been what I've said. If you don't mind, I'd like to briefly discuss Social Security. You mentioned it in the top of your show, and it's sort of a topic that's being kicked around, I think. Popularly, I'd like to begin by saying, you in the audience, what can you do? If you know three facts about any major popularly discussed public affair, public issue, you will find that you are the king or the queen of the room in that department, the department of knowledge about these matters, an alarmingly large amount of the time. I mean, if you know three things, most people are buried. All they know how to do is regurgitate T-shirt slogans. So if you can just make it your business to know at least three facts about any majorly politically discussed issue, especially if you're going to go around discussing it, number one, you're less easily duped by T-shirt slogans that don't mean anything or that are insultingly false. And number two, when you run into somebody else, see, the way to have a nonviolent solution, we have people voting and we have a representative government. This incentivizes us as the citizens, as the populace, to speak to each other, right? Let's talk in between elections. Let's talk in between votes. So when you're in a room full of people and they're all saying something that doesn't make any sense, and you just speak the language of evidence, just speak in that language. And if you just speak in evidence and you know three things, you will find that there's not a single fact in the rest of the room, an alarmingly large part of the time. It confronts the other person with that. It makes it clear that they are not the educated one. They are not the one who knows more. They are the ignorant moron who just vapidly regurgitates nonsensical propaganda. But you don't have to say those words to them. It'll be clear. So that's a nonviolent solution, I think, that anybody can do. Now, Social Security, you talked about, I heard your math, and it is inferior. I think one important thing that people don't know, and I actually learned a lot about this doing the research for my first book, it was never insurance. It was never intended to be insurance, and it never was in practice. One of the patterns of the New Dealers and Roosevelt, that tyrant Roosevelt, was all about, again, concentrating power into their hands in the name of helping the masses. That was the priority. Roosevelt was a loser who failed at everything he ever touched his whole life. He fell back upon his wealthy family, which is good for – I'm just telling people who he is if they don't know. The only thing he was good at was eventually he got good at being elected to office. He had a relative about 20 years before who was president and had a lot of good press or good feeling. And so Frank kind of cashed in on that. He had a little career in politics getting elected. And it sounds, by the way, a lot like the pre-presidential Cliff Notes bio of a president from my lifetime. Yeah? Like, he failed at everything he ever touched, had a wealthy family. He had a relative as president about 20 years before him. What's that sound like? But anyway, so that's Frank. So once he got into office, now he was successful. Now he was in charge, this guy who failed at everything his whole life. The number one priority was Frank's power. And he even says, people challenge him about it. He admits that, now remember, this is happening in 1933, right? He takes office in March of 33. They immediately implement a whole bunch of tyrannical legislation, much of which is struck down by the Supreme Court mercifully. And they kept coming back with like minor alterations. His farm, his agricultural communism plans called the AAA, they got struck down twice, and he just kept bringing it back with minor tweaks. He didn't care. He did not care. So with Social Security, the whole plan was just – so think about this. The big problem with the terms of money was deflation, okay? There was not enough money to go around, which is a problem of the Fed. Okay, that's not something that happens in the White House. It's not something that happens in the Congress. That's the Fed. But nonetheless, the New Deal policies exacerbated it. For example, the Social Security taxes, they come in, and they start – so the act gets passed in 35. They're debating it for a couple of years. It finally gets passed in 35. The taxes are taken in 37, okay, 1937. Now, they were supposed to start paying them out in 1942, but – they dipped into it early in 1940 for the presidential election year to try to buy votes. So they sort of set the precedent right away. It was never supposed to be insurance, and it immediately turned into a campaign fund. The two most cancerous legacies of the New Deal are concomitant. One is the intentional creation of dependent special interest groups. The second is the conversion of the Treasury into a perpetual campaign fund for politicians. And that's precisely what they did. So they taxed people, right? They took money away from the populace in a problem when the problem was they don't have enough money to begin with. There was enough dollars to go around. The government was to sit on the money for 5 years, which they didn't do. How does that help? How is that supposed to help the problem of people don't have enough money? Correct answer, it isn't. Right? It makes as little sense as it sounds like out there. Roosevelt admitted that they would be putting a deficit upon the Congress of 1980 if they did this Ponzi scheme. He also said, quote, "With those taxes in there, no damn politician can ever scrap my Social Security program," end quote. His priority was he knew it was a scam, he knew it was a Ponzi scheme, and he didn't care. That's an important thing to know. And I would like to also point out that what they did when the Supreme Court punted on the social monopolized medicine in the United States and declared it a tax, man, did my ears ring, because it's exactly it. Once you make it a tax, it's very difficult to get rid of it. Over to you.
Yep, that's exactly right. And, even though it's supposed to be insurance, it's supposed to be a trust fund, it's a tax, which means – it could be just like the New York State lotto. It's supposed to go to the schools. It goes into the school budget for 2 seconds, and then they pull it out of there and put it in the general fund, which is what they've been doing with Social Security for almost 190 years now. They just take this money, throw it in the general fund, and oh, no, and then, people like me and a lot of other people that have paid into Social Security and Medicare our whole lives and a lot of money, thousands upon thousands of dollars, all of a sudden, it's like, well, wait a minute, why did I pay into this thing?
Mm-hmm.
I got a letter. I know we're up against the bottom of the hour. I'll mention briefly. I graduated from high school in the 21st century, just to give people – well, I told you people. I'm in my mid-30s. So I got a letter when I was – I don't know. Oh, I'm sorry. Do we need to get off?
No, I just said you're a youngster.
Oh, thanks. So, yeah, real quick, they sent me a letter. The Department of Social Security sent me a letter when I was, 20, 25. And I wish I still had it. it said, okay, we have taken this much money from you. We have taken this much money from your employer. As of an amended date, 2035, 2040, something like that, we are only going to pay a certain, like, you know, 80 cents on the dollar or something like that for every dollar that we're supposed to pay out, but we're not going to take any less of your money. And so just so you know, that's the way it's going to be. They sent us a letter. They sent me a letter saying,
yeah,
we're not going to pay what we owe you, and we're not going to stop taking it. Over to you.
Something. I never got the only letters I got were
I owe taxes.
You paid so much into it all these years, and it's got the years listed. And, you know, if you're retired at 62, you get this much. If it's 66 and a half, it's this much. And it's 70, it's this much. Those are the only letters I ever got. So it is time for another break. Let me see if I can find a decent commercial.
Yeah, so just hang tight, Paul. D&D, Delivering the Truth in New York State and Beyond. We will be back in 4 minutes for your pleasure.
Here in front of the Midnight Mission, a homeless shelter in Los Angeles Skid Row, where they serve up to 3,000 meals a day and house 250 people a night, we're asking the homeless population in this area, what are you doing to stay safe from the coronavirus? Do you know what the coronavirus is?
No, I don't.
What do you know about the coronavirus?
That there's bacteria in the air.
I think it's a combination of tuberculosis, some other stuff.
Do you know what the coronavirus is, ma'am?
Well, it's supposedly said that it was some kind of virus discovered by a scientist, kind of doctor or so, and they named it either after him.
It's in the air, in your face. So we have to take care of ourselves. We're going to die.
Have you heard about any homeless hotels? The governor, Gavin Newsom, said that he was providing thousands of beds for the homeless. Have you heard anything about that?
No.
Nothing.
Just now hearing it from you.
You're just now hearing it. Okay. Have you heard anything about the homeless hotels?
Yes.
Very good. Why didn't you choose to go into the homeless hotel?
Well, I don't choose because I haven't been there, but I'm here, but I am safe because, you know, I'm doing what the government wants me to do.
Okay. So you feel safe among all these individuals out here?
Yes.
How do you get your news regarding the coronavirus?
I probably listen to it, I'll be on the radio, people walking past with a radio, or I'll watch the TV.
So you're not getting any cohesive information, you're just kind of word of mouth, and maybe you hear a radio or a TV where they may mention it here or there.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Mike. My birthing partner and I just got our new Lysenic and Freedom microchips. These microchips are awesome. They help me keep the freedom I used to before I enrolled into Southern Hampshire Institute of Technology.
I am Jamar. I am friends with Mike and his birthing partner. We met at SHIT. I am a liberal media major. I also just got a Lysenica Freedom microchip. SNSHIT recently mandates everyone on campus get their Freedom microchip. I jumped on the Lysenica joint.
This Freedom chip grants me the freedom to go everywhere I was allowed to before COVID. Now this chip tells me when I am and am not allowed to go outside. It also tracks my boosters. If I'm not up to date on a chip, it tells me when I need to get it by.
This chip is sweet. Without this Freedom chip, no one is allowed on our campus. I scan my hand whenever I want to pay for something. It also calls for an ambulance when I get another heart attack from a booster, which is totally not a heart attack from getting a gene therapy.
These Freedom chips are free. You can go to any drugstore or China Mart, and employed with inserted in your wrist.
Remember, it is not the mark of the beast. You just need to let Lysenica track and trace your every move. You just need a Freedom chip to buy, sell, work, and live. When you get a microchip, look for the Lysenica Freedom microchips. They are sweet.
Okay, class. We want to talk about what we learned during the lockdown. The first question is, what did we learn during the quarantine, kids? Susie.
That government overreach is real.
What about you, Johnny? We went from home of the brave to home of the government slave. And you, Michael?
We need to refresh the tree of liberty.
What about you, Diane?
So many sheep are willing to give up their rights because of a little fear.
Very good, class.
The following message is sponsored by Truth. Are you or someone you know suffering from sheepalism? Sheepalism is a debilitating disorder which affects a person's entire worldview and is characterized by ignorance, denial, abandonment of basic morals and values. An unwillingness to think critically about things read or heard by mainstream media is a strong sign that you have been affected. Fortunately, sheepalism is treatable in many cases. Treatment may include, but is not limited to, training to help the patient understand that truth is being intentionally withheld. Help in understanding that assumptions and speculations do not qualify as evidence for truth. Living with sheepalism is frustrating. Thankfully, there's hope for those suffering this debilitating condition. If you or someone you know is dealing with sheepalism, please contact your local Truth Movement for treatment. They're standing by to help you now, and remember, you're not alone. Side effects of treatment may or may not include shortness of breath, migraines, anaphylactic shock, and a worst scenario heart attack. See your support specialist for details.
Okay, we are back. So let me unmute Paul. So I was thinking during our conversation, I went back to school about 10 years after I graduated from college, and I took an economics class. And this class, the professor...
But you're not cooking.
The professor was a card-carrying socialist. Now, I'd already been out in the private sector, and I've never had a public sector job for about 10 years at this point. So every week, you know, it was one night a week, I argued with this guy, capitalism versus socialism, for about 3 hours every single week. Finally, the last day of class, after our final, he admitted that socialism was a great economic system, but it doesn't take into account the human personality. Okay, so the illustration of the human personality is there was an ACF plant in Huntington, West Virginia at the time. ACF, they make the tank cars. You see ACFX tank cars on the railroads all the time. Mm-hmm. And what they did was these guys were all, you know, good union workers. They only put out six cars per shift. And the plant manager wanted to get more cars out. So for every extra part of a car that they put out during their shift, they got a bonus. Well, that's the human nature that Dr. Cook forgot about, you know, was the bonus. Well, you know, these guys, they thought it was impossible to put out more than, you know, six cars per shift. They ended up putting out about 10 cars per shift. Because they were getting such big bonuses, they were working their tails off instead of just ho-humming around. And that's the human nature that socialism forgets about. Go ahead, Paul.
That's true. Thank you. That's true. And one other thing I'd like to point out about sort of – so what you're talking about is benefit. Why should I – what's in it for me, right? So what's in it for me is that – but also it's an important – so union is just a synonym for monopoly, state – sanctioned monopoly. And monopolies only exist and last if they're government sponsored, if they're put on the law books. In real life, with real people and real money, private collusion almost never lasts very long. Why? Because the people who are colluding turn on each other in the attempt to benefit themselves, usually by lowering their prices. But one important thing about, so those monopolists at that union, they didn't have the incentive factor of they can't get fired. Because sometimes the answer is, look, put out more or you're not going to work here at all. I'll find somebody else who will. Right? That's the other thing, that's the human element of it. Oh, my God, I'm going to lose my paycheck altogether. So that was also – so that was absent from them in both cases. It didn't get added in the second – so you have, for the audience – obviously, you have constants and variables, just like a science experiment when you were in school. And so we didn't totally change the variable of you can't lose, but we at least we made it so that you could gain more, and or they were able to in that example. And you're right, the outcome was not surprising. By the way, so labor unions, they are monopolies. They hurt the worker. This is an example of socialism, the gift that keeps on taking. So this is done in the name of helping the masses, helping the worker, right? The worker is a big class. Right, if you take it as a proportion of the population, right? If you had a pie graph, it's big. And what you have is these. So no more than 20% of U.S. jobs have been, you know, legally monopolized, really at any point in time since, well, that I know of. But the thing is, all that, so that's done between, you know, hundreds of different monopolies. So it, by law, forbids 80% or more of the worker from working there. So how can that benefit the worker as a class? You out in the audience. If you say it's good for the worker, it's good for those handful of people while they're a part of the monopoly, sure. That somebody has an unearned, unfair advantage enforced by the government, that small group should do better is not surprising. The question is, if the claim is, so don't take the word for the deed, and that's the case over and over again. People speak to you in T-shirt slogans, don't just take the word for the deed. Examine the evidence. Speak the language of evidence. What you have is people, the question is, does it help benefit the worker as a class? And the correct answer is no, not only because the overwhelming majority of the worker class are forbidden by law from working the job. But number two, they have to go out in the world and buy these products, right? And that is products that are artificially increased either in scarcity or in price because of the cost of the labor is passed on, or both. Scarcity because people aren't producing as much as they would have otherwise, as Dean pointed out in that first example. So that's important to know. Now, real briefly, if I could just hit a couple. I know it's a thing, you know, for the audience, you might say, oh, man, I'd be so scared to do an hour-long interview. I've done a few now, and at first it's daunting, but it's over before you know it. So real quick, New Deal. I mean, the New Deal is a disaster. It's a treasure trove of failures of socialism. Let's talk about the TVA. I just want to hit a few, you know, hit and run on a few. TVA, right, Tennessee Valley Authority. So this was done supposedly to help farmers in a certain area of the country, sort of the Tennessee Valley region. Now, I want to point out, there was no problem. Let's just point that out right there. Once the government starts meddling and he claimed there was a problem, there was no actual problem. Private power capacity was being generated. That is, the companies that existed before the TVA, when the TVA was implemented, their output exceeded consumption by 60%. That is, they were already making way more power than anybody needed to use. Way more. They were doing just fine. There was no problem. Let's start with that. Now, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So it wasn't broke. It was fine. And now they started trying to fix it with socialism. In 1930, before the TVA began, 3% of Tennessee farms had running water. This was as much or better than six other states, southeastern states. 20 years after the TVA was implemented in 1933, Tennessee farms did have 33% of them, up from 3%, did have running water. However, over the course of those two decades, those other states, I mean, Georgia, North Carolina, and Virginia, had 50% of farms with running water. Those three states were not part of the TVA cabal. So, yes, it got better, but did it? The question is, would it have been better if they would have just left it alone altogether? Answer, yes. The TVA also put, well, for example, there was one company called the Commonwealth and Southern, okay, that was in that area. The TVA taxed 98%. Now, this is literally true, according to census information. 2% of U.S. citizens lived in the TVA area. 98% did not. Therefore, they taxed 98% of the American citizens for the benefit of 2%. How does that help the country as a whole? It doesn't. Also, it exacerbated the problem of deflation. All these taxes, again, just take more money away. The problem is they don't have enough cash. The solution is not take more cash away from them. Yet every single New Deal program, every single socialist program does precisely that. They paid high wages. They charged low for the TVA now. So they have this government monopoly out there competing, quote unquote, with real businesses. So the TVA monopoly paid higher wages than average, charged lower prices for power, operated at an annual deficit, and hurt the other businesses around. The TVA had to go to the Congress every year, hat in hand, begging for more money. The stock of just one private company in the TVA area that was part of that private, you know, group of power producers that were doing such a good, really such a good job before when there was no problem. That stock decreased by $3.5 billion between the implement between March of 33 and 1935. And just to give people a little idea of who are not used to like the value of the dollar or whatever, back then, the per capita GDP in 1935 was $583. That means for every citizen in the, so the GDP is a national income. For per capita means per person. So for every mouth to feed, every back that needs clothes, et cetera, it broke down to $583 per person. This one company, $3.5 with a B, $1 billion, and that money just evaporated from the money supply. It didn't exist anymore. Therefore, it exacerbated the deflation problem by another $3.5 billion. Just in that alone. And what's more, this was supposedly they need these dams to increase production for food so we can feed the hungry. They two dams, so it got in March of 33, this got put in. Two dams got built in 36, one more in 38, three more in 1940. I mean, this, they didn't even provide the dams exist. People say, oh, the dams, the New Deal built that. Well, was it worth the cost? No. And did it actually help during the Depression? No. They were much later when it comes to New Deal coercion. So, again, we went over the Social Security. They just used it as campaign funds. The whole thing was just used as campaign funds. Oh, taxation, real briefly before. I don't want to miss taxation. So the Biden administration, the people in power now are doing – they're the wokers. And the wokers are just – it's the same group with a different label. They were Jacobins in France. They were New Dealers during that time. They're, I mean, it's the same element. They just give – it's the same product. They put a different wrapper on it, and they try to convince people that it's something new. But anyway, so they wanted to soak the rich. That was the New Dealers phrase, soak the rich, as opposed to today's like eat the rich or tax the rich. The consequences of that were to shift the tax burden from the, quote, rich, okay, the high earners, the corporate taxes, et cetera, and shift the burden onto the regular people through excise taxes. So what they did was excise taxes means like a tax on trolley tickets and liquor and cigarettes and movie tickets, things like that. Prior to the implementation of this, okay, corporate income tax comprised 42% of all tax dollars brought in from 29 to 32. That's the Hoover administration. That's before the New Dealers, okay? So before that happened, of all the tax dollars the U.S. government took in, 42% of them came from corporate income tax. Between 33 and 36, the excise tax, which was before only 20%, went to 50 to ranged from 50 to 60% of total tax dollars that it in. That is, they made a higher price. It's like a restaurant. We sell burgers for $10. Let's make some more money on burgers. Okay, let's just make a burger $100. But then think about how much more money we'll make. Well, guess what people do? They just stop buying burgers. They buy a salad instead or a pizza or go somewhere else. And in the same way, so the tax burden, the regular folks out there buying movie tickets and stuff were only paying about 20% of the total burden. After they, quote, soaked the rich, they had to pay 50 to 60% of the tax dollars brought in. It was never less. The excise taxes was never less than 40% of total tax revenue coming up to 1940. Over to you.
Yeah. Boy, there's a lot that went through my mind. But remember going back in history, learning about the serfs? And, you know, Everybody always felt sorry for the serfs because they had to pay taxes to the noblemen, the kings that owned the land. You know what rate the serfs were taxed at?
Tell me.
Paul,
tell
do you
me.
Have any idea?
I don't know.
25%. I want to be a serf, especially living in New York State. I want to be a serf. I'd give my left arm to be taxed at 25% instead of the, you know, 70, 80%. You know, you look at your phone bill, there's tariffs on your phone bill. I thought tariffs were just between countries, not, you know, between the phone company and me. But, yeah. And then the post-mortem on that ACF plant. Okay, so they were doing really, really well. So they were at, they got a contract, so they'd be at 100% production for like the next 5 years. So everybody was all happy because that was guaranteed employment and everything for 5 years. So what does the union do? They go on strike. What does management do? Well, the St. Louis plant was at 10% production for the next 5 years. So they closed down the Huntington, West Virginia plant and moved everything to St. Louis. Well, those idiots were out there protesting in front of the plant for 3 or 4 years after the place was shut down and mothballed. You know, in the wintertime, they had their 55-gallon drum that they had a fire going in so they wouldn't freeze to death. And I was like, what good is this doing? There's nobody around anymore, you know. That goes back to your unions, your union part of the talk. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah.
No, you're right on. I mean, going to get – I mean, I understand that for some people, and I don't want to – you know, I came from a house. My father is a union card clinging, Democrat voting – you know, construction where he's a good man, good father. But, like, I grew up in that kind of house, and I turned out okay. And I'm like, Dad, you know, like, listen, I mean, let's obey the evidence. That I'm not telling you. So for some people, a union card is just another – it's just another form that you sign to get the job. They don't really care. They just they see a high – they see an attractive wage or benefits. They just need a job. They're not nut jobs. They're not scumbags. They're not cowards who don't have enough – courage, respect for themselves to go survive without, you know, it's kind of like, you know, see those movies where, like, they're supposed to be, like, a tough guy, scumbag, gangster, and he'll only hit somebody when, like, two or three of his henchmen have, like, are holding the other guy's hands behind his back. And that's
right,
how
right.
It is with people who are really into the union. Like, they hide behind, so in other words, what's being sold to them is, you don't have to ask daddy for lunch money anymore. You know, just hide behind mommy's skirt, and mommy will ask daddy for you, but you also have to pay mommy a special tax, right, union dues. But it adds an extra layer of dependency as opposed to actually giving the person a greater independence. And that's important to know. I have been through union places. I was a janitor at the Honeywell plant in Buffalo for a time, and there was a large union contingent there. They all bitched. They all bitched about the terms. Especially the strong workers. The strong, it's kind of like Jerry Rice was a football player some time ago when I was a teenager when he played. And so he used to train. So I used to, like, watch that kind of thing. He used to train by running in the desert. And he would strap these parachutes, little, like, 18-inch around parachutes to his back to increase the wind resistance. He did that to make his legs stronger. That's kind of how it is with, like, these union monopolies. The strongest workers, they're getting held back. Like, every like, but it's like putting, you know, a parachute, and then, like, eight more parachutes. And then, you know, they're being dragged down by having to carry all these other people because you have to take the whole group. So they probably could do better if they went out. But anyway, I just don't want to demonize all union people. For some, they're not all nut jobs. So for some of them, it is just another form you sign. Union, no union, whatever, I don't give a damn. So I just wanted to make that clear. Real briefly, I mean, the time is fleeting. I guess I'll get off the New Deal for a little bit and talk about monopolized medicine briefly. The United States has been moving more and more in that direction since World War II, since the New Dealers, frankly. It's important. So from 1946 to 1996 in the United States, beds per 1,000 people decreased 60%, while hospital personnel per bed occupied increased ninefold. I'm going to say that again. There are 60% fewer actual hospital beds for people who might need them. Okay, at the end of that period, in 1996 than they were in 1946. Yet, the workers and administrators in the hospital increased ninefold from what they had been before. So the beds, the amount of people to take care of is shrinking, yet the amount of people on the payroll is expanding. Cost per patient day increased 40-fold adjusted for inflation over that time period. This is the kind of actual scarcity, rationing, waiting, whatever you want to call it. That is always the biggest problem. In Canada, people point to Canada, especially in New York State. Do you know that in Canada, they tax people higher amount for their Social Security, but they pay out less of a check than the United States does. Why?
Because
the reason is because they have this socialist Ponzi scheme called Social Security, and then the other socialist scam called socialized medicine. They have to raid Peter to pay Paul. It's basically the answer. It was kind of like you said. Okay, we have this big pile of money over here for Social Security. We can't afford what we promised them with this free universal health care. It's incredibly expensive, so-called free universal health care. And that's just one of the costs. You know, people focus on a low nominal cost. They get paid less. So the Canadians overall were taxed at 33% of GDP in 2019, while the United States was income taxed at 24% of GDP. That is, Canada had to fork over a third of their national income in income taxation, while the United States forked over a quarter of their national income in income taxation at the same time. Yet, Social Security is 17% tax in Canada versus 15% in the U.S. In 2019, in Canada, the average Social Security check was $984, where in the U.S. it was $1,500. And again, so this is all just it's a big mess. You have to look at the whole picture, and I'll throw it over to you.
Yeah, well, we certainly learned a lot.
So, Paul, you know, why don't you tell us again your website, your books, and you're allowed to try to sell yourself here.
Yeah, we have about a minute left.
Thank you. I'll try not to use the whole minute. So, first of all, I've enjoyed my time on the show. I hope that we can talk again in the future. My website is Paul Dayton. That's D-A-Y-T-O-N, Dayton like Ohio, pauldayton.us. If you go to my website, send me an email, mention the show, D&D, anytime in the next week. This is April 6th, 2023, so anytime between now and another week, mention the show, give me a mailing address. I will send you a free copy of my first book, Correcting Our Financial Miseducation, Raising the Bar for the Average. I would like to raise the bar for the average in larger political issues from its current status of just vapidly regurgitating propaganda slogans and militantly clinging to them despite any evidence presented. That's the current bar. I would like to see that elevated to ask for evidence, examine evidence, speak the language of evidence. Over to you.
Perfect. Yeah.
Okay.
Having you on tonight. We'd love to have you a guest again someday. Once we have the podcast up, I'll be sure I send it to you. You can listen to all our podcasts on iHeartRadio, Apple Radio, or Apple Podcasts, Freedomizer Radio, Blog Talk Radio. Make sure that you guys tune in next week. We're going to have on State Representative Ronald Nate from Idaho, actually. He is the Senior Policy Fellow at the Idaho Freedom Foundation. So we can't wait to get his insight on not just what's going on with Idaho, but what's going on over there in Senate. So he's going to be an interesting guest to have on. So D&D, Delivering the Truth in New York State and Beyond, go see all our events. Right now we're booked up until June, so we're taking June bookings. If you guys want to send us an email, we would love to have you. D&D, Delivering the Truth.
And you guys all have a happy Easter.
Yeah, happy Easter. Have a good weekend, guys. Well, thanks again for being on. Good night, everybody.
Good night.